Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Hello, everybody. I hope everybody had a beautiful day today. Oh, my God. It's the perfect weather. I love it like this. It's September. I love it. Well, I'm flying solo tonight. Johnny can't make it, but we still have a great show for you. We've got Lamont Dozier Jr. He's a singer, songwriter, producer. He's done everything. And if you don't recognize the name, his father was Lamont Dozier, Dozier and Holland duo, famous Motown hits written. Oh, my God, I can't even count how many. And we also have Rachel Schwartz with us tonight. She's the manager of the Daytime Emmy Awards. And we're going to discuss how we are going to be seeing the Primetime Emmys and the Oscars this season due to the coronavirus. So before we start, I believe we have Lamont holding on the line. I'm just going to say thank you to our sponsors. Thank you to the Hive Bar and Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey, Precious Memory Video in Kintnersville, Pennsylvania, KGV Wines in South Africa, Tees for the Times and Other Stuff in Clifton, New Jersey, Syntech Productions in Lenoka Harbor, New Jersey, Oleander Public Relations in Texas, Take a Break from Cancer.org for Pete's Sake, Joey Max Hot Dog Truck Cafe in Harrison, New Jersey, and the Observer Newspaper, which is fabulous because our shows will now have an excerpt in print in the Observer Newspaper. So that's fabulous news. Thank you for everybody for being a sponsor. We appreciate it. On the phone, Mr. Lamont Dozier Jr., how are you, sir?
I am doing great today, Joanne. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. I can't thank you enough. I heard the new stuff. I love it. It's fantastic. Before we start, I know we're promoting you. You know, this is all about you, but we have to mention your father. You know that.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah.
we can't talk about you without your father. So, now, I got to ask. Now, out of all the songs you could have picked out of the Dozier Holland catalog, why did you pick the, oh, my God, I'm losing my mind. You gave me two songs.
The Lover selection, yes.
Thank you. Why that one out of all the songs?
Well, I think that one was picked because, first of all, it's one of my favorites that he written and composed and with Brian Holland. But also on that particular song, he sang the lead on it. And some of the other, like, Motown songs, he was co-writer with those. But on this one, he did this in 1972 on their own Invictus label after they left Motown. And that was one of the tunes that he was actually singing lead on. So I wanted to add another twist to that and bring it up to date with me doing the lead vocal on Being His Son and paying tribute to HDH. And that was one of the reasons. And plus, it's a great song. It was a great soul classic. And I just wanted to update it and bring it to 2020, 2021. And I pray that the audience love it as much as we did making it. But that's the history behind that.
Well, definitely mission accomplished. It sounds fabulous. And it's called Why Can't We Be Lovers? I'm sorry, guys. I lost my train of thought because you're promoting the one that you actually wrote, too. Is it going to take time? It's going to take some time.
I'm going to take my time. Yeah, I'm going to take my
time. Thank you. I got to take my time. I know. I'm sorry, I'm by myself. I usually John is with me, my co-host, and I'm like running everything, and I'm losing my brain. I apologize. But you've had music in your life, your entire life, Leah, and I got to ask if the story is true about Dad. Was he the janitor at Motown and then became a songwriter?
I don't know if he was at Motown. He used to my mom was at, Elizabeth Ann Dozier was my mom, and she was at Motown before he got there, and she was working with Berry Gordy's sister, and they were doing like marketing and promo and the business aspect of things, records. And then at the time, my father was working for like a pop bottle company. He was doing janitor duties there, but also signed to Berry Gordy's sister label, Anna Records. And at the time, he was known as Lamont Anthony, and he had hit records as a teenager. And but before he got over to Motown, Berry had a stipulation where the writers had to work in threes, and that's how he got over to Motown with a bit of finagling, whatever. He got his contract released from Anna Records, and then he came over to Motown, I think in 59 or so, as a songwriter. And then that's when he was paired up. The first trio was Lamont Dozier, my senior, my father, Brian Holland, and Freddie Gorman, who was also the author of Please, Mr. Postman. They worked together as three guys. And then after that, consequently, Eddie Holland came into the picture, and then it became Holland Dozier Holland. So that gives people a little bit of history of how he came from Anna Records and got over to Motown Records, you know, so.
Right, and then he wrote for, my God, Four Tops, Marvin Gaye, the Supremes, Martha and Vandellas. I mean, the list just goes on and on. My God.
Yeah.
Great stuff. All great stuff. I miss it so much, but I still listen to it. It may not be in our face, but I still love it and listen to it. So now you had this in your life. Mom and Dad were both in the music industry. Why'd you wait till 15 to get out there?
15? I still say I was like young then. I was like a kid, teenager, and I was with the Detroit Council of the Arts. And to give your audience a little background on that, Detroit Council of the Arts was like a summer youth program for the artistically gifted in the city of Detroit. And
oh,
what
nice.
You could do, you could pick a discipline or curriculum, be if you were a dancer, actor, musician, or singer, and you would do that for the summer, and you would make money doing it. It was like your first like job, so to speak. It was one of my first jobs. And at the
pretty
end of
cool
that
job.
8-week period, it was real cool because you were kind of doing what you love. And even a lot of kids may not have known they wanted to do at that age, but I tell you, they found a calling, and they got a chance to make a little money doing it. And then at the end of that 8 weeks, you had to put on a show for the city of Detroit. And that city of Detroit, I mean, we had to go to Hearts Plaza, which for your audience may be familiar with it. It's a big, like, amphitheater down in the city near the riverfront of Detroit. And you could have an audience of thousands of people come. And in Detroit, you know, where so many talented people spring from, I mean, it was a free show for the people of Detroit, but you still had to be good. And those experiences really shaped my foundation for, you know, becoming a professional musician and doing this full time. But, we started out pretty young. It was a lot of young kids who got a rewarding experience. Our mentors were great. Our teachers, instructors, they were professionals themselves. So we got a chance to learn real-world experience and make a little money doing it. So it was really cool.
Nice. Yeah, that's a great job. My God, at 15, could you imagine that? Oh, my God. Did anybody from that group happen to get an opportunity in the industry as well, or you don't know?
Well, I know a few people did, like Spencer Barfield. We had is different musicians that sprang from that. And then the interesting thing about it was a competing program across town that was led by Kim Weston, who also wrote for Motown. And she had a similar kind of setup, and they trained children and what have you. But, you know, we had different instructors like Mickey Braden out of she's in New York now. But a lot of people went on to do Broadway and do musicals and theater work. They were just fantastic, and they were our teachers too. And and I just pray that we're representing them well, because they certainly gave us the skill set to go on out here and be professionals. But That was a remarkable experience for me, you know, as far as, you know, just steering you to give you something to do that was very creative and giving you tools that you could use even till today. So it's, I was just very fortunate to have that program, you know.
Right. And back then, I mean, if you were talented and you really didn't know what to do with it, you know, now you've got the internet, you go here, there, and everywhere. But back then, it was such a hassle to get, you know, noticed or seen or, you know.
Yeah, it's a different industry, too. Yeah. It was a different time and a different, we didn't have, like, the internet. We didn't have the kind of avenues that one could take now with it. But we were, we also benefited from the hands-on experience, which some kids may not have, you know, unless you're too young to be in a club or you're too young to perform. We were out there doing it and performing and had to put on shows. So it's a little give and take depending on what time you came along, you know. So
right. No, but I just saying, too, like these kids, like if that group wasn't there, maybe some of those kids wouldn't even have known that they had the ability to move forward and be talented enough to do it, you know, which is great.
Exactly.
That's what I meant, you know. So they should have more of that. They should have. But you're doing something similar to that, but not with the kids. You're doing the We Care Tribe. Are you still doing that?
Well, We Care Tribe is a bunch of, I would say, adult entertainers from the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
And they do, like, you know, charity work for the homeless and the thing like that. They don't have a division yet that's devoted to children yet, but they are concentrating on other plights of the community, like for homelessness and for hunger and things of that nature. And we put on several shows in L.A. To combat that. We've been very successful as far as raising enough funds to have some type of impact. So that's really cool, too. But I do like helping children out, and I do believe, like, hey, man, you need to have access to instruments and musical acumen and teachers and instructors. You know, I support that wholeheartedly because that's what saved me. I mean, we could have been doing anything else, but just having that outlet, man, it made a total difference. It made a total difference in our lives. So,
yeah.
You know,
yeah. I wish I had to. There should be a lot more of that. And it's funny that we're saying, sitting here, I'm wearing a very old T-shirt. It says VH1 Save the Music. Oh, my God. I don't even know what year it's from. I don't, you know, but it's true that, you know, they've taken so much funding away from schools and the kids who can't afford to rent the instrument or whatever, you know, it's got to be there. Music is life. It makes you happy and, you know, but anyway, so you went on to do so much other stuff. And what is this, the Introducing Lamont Dozier Jr., this is your first release or not? I'm guessing based on the title.
Yeah, it's my first solo release. I've recorded other material.
Right, with many others. Right.
Yeah, but this is my first solo release, which is really cool and special to me. And we decided to go with a couple of covers and then do a couple of originals, too, that would highlight my songwriting ability. So we did that. My other cover on the EP called Hello, It's Me is by, you know, the great Todd Rundgren, his classic. Yeah. We decided to add a rendition to that and just give the audience some familiarity. Sometimes when you're a new artist and they're not familiar with your work, sometimes you can catch their ear with something that they may recognize. And so I'm very proud of the four tunes we did. And so far we're getting good feedback, especially from the UK right now. We're going to be doing a promotion here this month. So, but the UK, man, we're charting, yeah.
Right, you're number one on the UK charts, right? The urban UK charts.
Yes, we're like the UK urban influences charts. We were there 3 weeks at number one, and the UK soul charts. We've been there number two for 2 weeks straight. I think they may change that this week, but it's just an honor to get that high because
congratulations.
So much music coming out. I mean, great soul artists and great people out there doing fantastic music. So to reach that high on the charts, man, I am honored.
Congratulations. Please. Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, why did you wait so long to do your first solo CD? I mean, I know you've done, like you said, you've worked with so many other artists, either background music or conducting the band. I mean, every playing instruments. I mean, why would you wait so long to do a solo project of yourself?
Well, some people say you waited. I prefer to think of it as I finally got a chance to do it right, so to speak. I had been doing some other things in the industry, and I'm a live cat, you know, if you hadn't noticed. I've done so many live performances and worked with so many different musicians and different acts, and that brought some satisfaction to me. But I think this time it was just, opened up for me to finally put my own music out. I finally had the musicians I wanted. I finally had the situation I wanted. I had been going out to, go for jobs for A&Rs and other record labels before.
Right.
And we had gotten rejected. It was like, it's not this, it's not that. And with the different changes in the industry, being a more focus on like rap and hip hop and things of that nature, and I'm an R&B soul cat, I was kind of left out in the cold several times. You know, it was just that I wasn't the type of artist that they were looking for at the time. So while I bided my time, I said, well, one thing I can do, I can perform live and I can do session work. And I chose to steer my energies toward that until the time came forth that I would be able to get my own stuff out there. And so that's what I would count as counting toward, you know, me maybe taking a little bit more time to get my stuff out there for myself, because the industry was ever changing. It was just the dynamics were changing, and what was in demand was changing. What was being signed was being changed. So, you know, today, I said, being an independent guy, I said, I'm finally in a position to put my own music out with my own expression. And I think we achieved that. And I'm so glad that we're having the success thus far we're having, because it's something that until you know it and you get it, you know, verified, you just like, I knew we were on to something. And I'm just glad we got an opportunity to get it out now. And and I'm sorry for the delay, because I would have loved to been out here sooner, but I love it's nothing better to say that I was right. So all those A&R people that said I was wrong, I'm right.
That's right.
I may not rap and I may not do hip hop or whatever, but I do soul music, and there's always a market for good soul music, so.
Yeah. Well, why don't we get right to it? Let everybody hear it, everybody. Why can't we be lovers? Lamont Dozier Jr.'s new CD, introducing Lamont Dozier Jr. Check it out. You're really going to like it. He definitely brought it up to date, like he said. That's wonderful. Nice. Wow. Wow.
Yes.
Oh, man. That was so good. Oh, man.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I love it. Oh. And you're, and I, oh, man. I wish I could move. I just had surgery on my neck, and I'm sitting here trying to, I can't even move. But, oh,
oh,
it was
no.
So sweet.
Oh, no.
It was so nice. It was so nice and smooth. You sound fantastic. My God.
Oh, thank you. Thank
wonderful.
You.
Wonderful. I could be wrong, but it sounds like no dubbing in there. It sounds like you use a live band.
Yeah, we went live on all tracks. You know,
nice.
We had wonderful musicians and a lot of first call session. My friends, they came in and laid it down for me, and I'm so proud of it. We had the great David Rudeau, who worked with Janet Jackson and different ones. He did all our tracking and mixing for us, and he just really, we just had a wonderful environment. My music producer, Kevin Flournoy, he had a nice arrangement to it, because I told him, I said, I didn't want it to be exactly like the original. I want it to be just something updated. In the original version, I think my dad talks a little bit more, but I said, to make it current, I said, I'm not going to talk or anything like that, but let's fill that in with some musical things. And it, we just updated it for today, and it came across really great. And I want to thank my musician and producer. They did a fine job. So,
oh, man,
it's
a great job.
I think the people that recognize it, they're going to be like, oh, my goodness.
It's so smooth, mm-hmm. and like, it definitely is up for today. It's standard, you know, and not that you change it a lot, but it just sounds great, you know. It just sounds more.
Oh, thank you.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Oh, my goodness. I wish I could hear you sing Standing in the Shadows of Love. You won a contest with that a long time ago, didn't you?
I sure did. We did back in the 80s, we did a show in Detroit called Saturday Night Music Machine, and I was a contestant on there and got to be a finalist for my show. We were doing Standing in the Shadows of Love, and I got my highest score, believe it or not, from Don Was Not Was. You know, he was like,
oh,
I love you. He's my favorite. You know, I think I would have won if I had one more score like his, but I ran into Don a couple of years ago. I said, thank you for the high score. He was like, oh, yeah, I remember you. Sorry. He was like, yeah, man, that was a long time. I said, yeah, man. But I said, you know, that inspired me to keep at it, man. So I appreciate
it.
So,
right. Oh,
but Don's a cool guy. Yeah, he's a cool dude.
Yeah, he's a great producer. Oh, my God.
Super producer.
Oh, he's beyond. I mean, he's worked with everybody. My goodness.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
Was he working on anything now, or you have no idea?
I don't know if he's doing anything like recently. When I ran into him, he was putting together like a project with a bunch of Detroit cats, like Randy Jacobs and Pee Wee Atkins, the late Atkins. He passed away, but it was a lot of Detroit guys. He was putting together to do something. As an old to Detroit, and I really like that. But he's gone on to do fantastic things. Like I said, he's one of the super producers in the game, you know. So.
Oh yeah, no, because I haven't heard his name lately. I haven't heard that he's worked on anything lately. Maybe it was recent that you saw him, and maybe you knew what he was working on.
I think I saw him doing something, but I can't recall it right now. But he's got his hands in a lot of things. So,
yeah, well, when you're talented, that's what happens, you know. Well, you know, you're busy all the time working with other artists all the time. I mean, Jennifer Hudson, you're working with, and I mean, my God, so many. You've worked with so many jazz greats too. I mean, Dave Koz, Rick Baum. Amazing.
That's my buddy.
Yeah.
I love Dave Koz, you know, and Rick Braun and those guys. It's always been a pleasure. Just cool working with those guys. Cool studio environment, cool records.
Right.
Just great to work with them.
Well, the song reflects it, because it sounds like it was a really laid back atmosphere, and you just did your thing, and it just sounds really great. I loved it. I loved it. Where can folks
Thank
get
you.
The new CD, Lamont?
Well, right now, they can get it on digital right now. We're going to have a CD and vinyl coming up shortly. But right now, you can get it on iTunes, Amazon Music, or Apple Music, YouTube Music. And then you can stream it, of course, on Spotify and Pandora. And then shortly we're going to have like a vinyl campaign coming up, limited pressing, and some CDs, you know, because a lot of people are getting their music through downloads, but there will be some CDs available shortly. And that's going to just be a compilation of introducing Lamont Dozier Jr., and that's going to have all the four tunes that have been released thus far. So that should be coming out in a month or so. So we're just excited about that, Joanne, and your blog talk radio audience. I hope they enjoy the music and that they are able to embrace it and make their own. But shortly, we'll have everything for them. Yeah.
Excellent. And that's the name of the CD, or the, I call them CDs no matter what, is
yeah.
Introducing Lamont Dozier. I actually call it albums, but Introducing
right.
Lamont Dozier Jr. And you could get it on
yes.
Any online outlet that sells music. And also, do you have a website, Lamont, as well?
We don't have a website, but my other, because we're actually putting a new website in, but you can find me on Instagram, Facebook, of course, and I'm also on LinkedIn for the business contacts. But you can drop a line to me on Instagram or Facebook and just say hello, or you dig in the music or whatever, and I'll get
yeah.
the message, and I'll try to respond to you when I can.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Oh, my God. Thank you so much, everybody. Lamont Dozier Jr., new CD introducing Lamont Dozier Jr., and the song you just heard was a remake of Why Can't We Be Lovers, which was actually originally sang by Lamont's dad. So, and it sounds fabulous.
Yes.
Oh, your father, oh,
oh
he's got to be so
Joanne.
Proud of you. Your father's got to be so
yes.
proud.
He's
you know,
loving it.
I
played it for Brian Holland too, and he loved it too. So
I'm
just honored. I didn't want to embarrass them. I just wanted to do a great job.
Right.
So
they're
loving it. They're loving it thus far. So
nice,
man.
Well, everybody, thank you so much again, Lamont Dozier Jr. Lamont, thank you, and all the best.
Oh, thank you, Joanne.
Keep in touch, and let's get number
yes.
one on the U.S. charts.
Yes, we're working on that. And thank you to your Blog Talk Radio audience. Thank you guys for listening in. And we'll be talking to you real soon. But thank you, Joanne, for having me today.
No, thank you, hon. Have a good night. Take care. It was a pleasure.
All right. Thank you. It was
bye
a pleasure. Bye. Thank you. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Oh, boy. I really enjoyed that. I mean, if you know the original version, I mean, this I don't want to say it outdoes it, because it doesn't. I mean, you can't compare the two, really. And the fact that it's his father's song and he's singing it, that's just amazing. I mean, he must be so proud. So our next guest, we have Rachel Schwartz. She is the manager of the Daytime Emmys, and we're going to talk to her about how well that was pulled off and also how the future is looking for Primetime Emmys and the Oscars. So I actually am going to put Lamont's song back on while I reach out to Rachel, so this way we don't have any dead air, okay? Hang on a moment, guys. I'm going to get Rachel Schwartz on the line. So Joanne. For cutting it short, but we have the wonderful Rachel Schwartz on the line, and I didn't want to keep her holding. And everybody, welcome to the show. Rachel Schwartz. Hi, Rachel. How are you?
Hi, thanks so much for having me. I am well and safe, which is what we can ask for in these times.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. Well, before you came on, I was saying what you did. So you are the manager for the Daytime Emmys, and we got to talk about the stress that you were under trying to put that all together, because it turned out to be a fantastic affair, a virtual show. I mean, the first one, really, right?
Well, thank you very much. Yes, we were, by virtue of timing and the lockdown, we actually ended up doing the first pre-taped show, which was our CBS telecast, and then the first virtual shows, which were our Daytime Emmys honoring digital dramas, and then honoring children's lifestyle and animation programming, and
right,
then the sports Emmys.
Right, right. Now, were you the one who came up with the idea? Well, we got to do it. The show must go on. Well, how do we do it? And did you come up with the idea, let's do it virtually? I mean,
I did not specifically come up with the idea. We have Adam Sharp, our wonderful CEO, and we have an in-house full-time production team as well that kind of started brainstorming ideas as soon as we could really start to wrap our heads around what was going on with the pandemic. Our last day in the office was March 12th.
Mm.
So the first awards that we were supposed to be having after that were the sports awards, which were originally scheduled for the last week of April. But we knew pretty quickly that that was not going to happen in the intended format. We held out a little bit of hope for daytime, but obviously it became clear that that was not going to be the case.
Right. Yeah.
But once we knew that we were going to have a show on CBS for daytime, we knew we wanted to do that one pre-taped, and then it became a matter of doing all of the other ones virtual live and kind of getting our feet wet and then looking back and saying, this was really cool. We were the first people to do this, really.
Right, right. And it was, you really pulled it off, too, which was amazing.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Now, are you working on the Primetime Emmys and the Oscars, or no, since you guys did so well? Are they asking for your input? I mean,
no, we are the National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences. So the Primetime Emmys are administered by the Television Academy in LA, which is a different sister. We consider ourselves to be sister organizations.
Yeah, yeah.
So we don't have a say in what they are doing with their show. We certainly hope that they watched it. We know that they have been watching the CBS show, and perhaps they will take some ideas from that. But you know, primetime is coming up. The Tonys have announced that they're going to be virtual. Obviously, the Oscars are in April. And, you know, they also have the added factor of they have network involvement.
Right.
And other than our first daytime show, the rest of our shows, we did not have a network involved. So we were streaming on our own new app and on our website. And that also really gave us the freedom to, we could, you know, put as many categories on as we wanted, and if things ran a little bit over or a little bit under,
it was no big deal.
And we kind of knew with the digital shows going into it, because every single nominee was coming into this giant video conference essentially from their own home or Wi-Fi network, we knew there is a chance that there could be technological problems, and they will be out of our control. People are home on all parts of the planet right now. So we didn't really have a say in where they were calling in from. So we knew that there was a possibility of tech issues, but we were not on television. So we kind of decided it was worth the risk to try to come up with this new format.
Right, right. I'm curious, a guesstimate, was the were the numbers higher or about the same as it was aired on regular television?
So the Daytime Emmys have not been on TV for several years.
No, I know. That's right. You guys were doing it already virtually to some degree. That's right.
Right. So the past couple of years, we had already been live streaming it to our website.
Right.
So we were quite excited with the numbers that were for the CBS telecast this year, and we were quite excited about the press talking about, you know, this is proof that the Daytime Emmy should be televised, since we I've always thought that they should be televised. But the big advantage with the virtual shows being on our new app is that people can go back and watch them whenever.
Right.
So they don't have to watch them at the exact moment that they're on. They can watch them wherever. They live on our app in perpetuity. Right. And people can send it around to their mom, their dad, their friends, and say, hey, here I am as a nominee or as a winner on the daytime Emmys.
Right, right. Well, we actually had Adam on the show, oh my God, right before the Emmys. So that's why I was like, duh, I remember I asked him that. That's why I caught myself.
Yeah.
But now, did you find it harder when it was live or when someone was pre-recording their part on the show?
It was definitely more difficult to produce live. I myself am not on the production team, but kind of being a green room producer, which is what we called the folks who were manning the virtual green rooms night of.
Yeah, yeah.
But overall, there were pluses and minuses to each. I think the big positive of having the pre-taped show was that it really looked slick. It really looked sophisticated. We were really happy with the finished product.
Right.
And the big negative would be that people didn't get to have that reaction that you see when your name is called live.
Yeah.
But for the virtual shows, the negative was obviously the possibility of technological glitches.
Stress.
But the positive was something that we really did not anticipate, which is that we had these virtual green rooms set up where every category people would be placed in there. So you would have, you know, the five nominees for a certain category all set up in this virtual green room just talking about their craft. And some of them knew each other already. Some of them had never met. But this is an experience that would not have been duplicated even if we had been live, because people would have been seated all throughout the auditorium. And this is something that we really enjoyed and we want to take advantage of in the future. And we've been thinking about how to do maybe virtual town halls or virtual happy hours or something just to keep those industry connections going.
Right, right. Now the, I always lose my train of thought. I have like 20 questions and I always get them all jumbled up in my head. I don't write them down. So.
No problem.
So how did the sports one go then, the sports awards show? I don't know what it's called. I'm not a sports nut.
The sports Emmys. So that was our most recent virtual show that is completed, and we have the news Emmys and the documentary Emmys coming up towards the end of September as well. The sports one was really phenomenal. I would say production value, each virtual show that we did got better and better because we had the advantage of learning from little mistakes or little glitches that happened.
Yeah.
So, you know, we started out with the digital Emmys, the digital drama daytime Emmys, which only has seven categories. And we did that intentionally because we knew this was our first time doing this. This was our first time using this technology. We wanted to kind of get our feet wet, test the waters, see how we did it. But by the time we got to sports, we had presenters, we had hosts, we had almost 150 different nominees coming into this virtual studio system that had been set up. We were obviously all doing it remotely. Our staff is largely in New York, but we had, for some of the shows, we used an in-house studio in Burbank, California, but our playback team was in the UK. So it was really an international affair to get this done.
Yeah, you're all over the place. Now, the have you guys started prepping, well, you got to be prepping, or producing anything or have anything in the can for the news and documentary Emmys coming up?
Yes, so this is actually pretty exciting because in addition to, obviously, it's virtual, which going into this year, we did not intend, but one of the discussions that we did intend going into this year was thinking about splitting up the news and documentary Emmys into two nights. So we have gone ahead and done that for the first time.
Right.
So the news Emmys will be on Monday, September 21st, and the next night, Tuesday, September 22nd, will be documentary categories.
Oh, wow.
And those will both be at 8 p.m. live on our app and on our website.
Right.
So that's going to be
right.
streaming, yes.
Yeah.
But that's going to be very exciting because it will really, I think, shine a spotlight on both facets of the news and documentary contest and really give the creators in all of those fields kind of their moments in the sun, because we're splitting the news categories and the documentary categories. So each genre gets their own focus.
Wow. So now, okay, now when they make the announcement of the winner, you guys are sending the envelope ahead of time that day. How are they getting the reveal of the winner?
That's a great question. So we have been sending the envelopes to the presenters during the week, basically with a note on it saying, do not open until
yeah.
the live show. Resist the temptation because we know you want to. And they are actually opening it live and actually reading it on the air live for the first time. So the presenters don't know the winners ahead of time. The nominees don't know the winners ahead of time. We don't know the winners ahead of time. It's really a live affair.
Yeah.
But the only difference is however many presenters we have, all of those packets of envelopes need to be sent to all of those different locations.
Right.
Wherever they are being quarantined.
And you sent them ahead of time. Oh, my God, the temptation must be phenomenal.
Yes.
I mean, I would want to open it.
I know. It would be very difficult to resist, but it would be, I think, very anxiety-producing for us to have to figure out how to get it to people on day of and
right.
worry that it doesn't get there.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I don't know. I don't know if I trust everybody. I don't know.
Well, if you see, we have these very fancy, unique envelopes that have a ribbon that need to be pulled open.
Oh, it really needs to be open.
Yeah. Yes, it's not just unfolding it or just looking at it. So we have to have faith that people are actually not opening them ahead of time because we would probably be able to tell.
Wow. No, yeah, definitely. Definitely. And you would be able to tell right now if somebody was acting differently, you know, because, they told me that I won. And, you know.
So, yes, the winners are actually finding out in real time.
Right,
On the live show that they have won.
God, there must be, oh, my God, how many people are, like, Zooming in this? I mean, between the background, the presenters, the people watching, the winners or nominees. I mean, what is the number guesstimate of people involved other than just the public watching for entertainment?
If we look at all of the virtual shows that we have completed so far, we've had approximately 650 live feeds.
Wow. Wow. So, and what would the norm be if you did it on TV live, no distancing, like a regular show? What would that number be, people involved?
I mean, we would probably, depending on how many cameras we had in the house, it would just be the house cameras for in terms of feeds.
Yeah.
How many people are involved? Of course, we still have a very robust production crew working backstage and working in the truck.
Yeah.
For those types of shows. But the difference with this is just that every single nominee has their own feed.
Wow. And I know. Oh, my God. Imagine if the internet crashed. My God.
Yeah.
Everybody's using it. Everybody in the country. I mean, everywhere, you know. So.
Yeah. And we had one of our shows was a night that there were very bad lightning storms in the Northeast. So we did worry about connections, and what if our hosts or our presenters lost a connection?
Right.
One thing that we did as a fail-safe was for our hosts, they have in their possession a complete stack of envelopes, so they have the envelope for every single category.
Right.
In case we lost a presenter feed, we would at least have the ability to go to the host and have them announce the winner.
And how long have you been doing this, Rachel, with the daytime Emmys? I'm sorry, our NATSA, ISA.
Yeah. I started in January of 2019.
Oh,
so,
wow.
through, let's call last year a regular year,
right.
if you will. So I went through one regular cycle, and then this year with kind of everything being turned on its head. And traditionally, I work in daytime administration. We have a pretty divisive line between administration and production. So for the most part, my day-to-day responsibilities are around the actual administration of the contest itself.
Wow.
So rules, getting people to enter, vetting the submissions, vetting
right.
judges, assigning judges to panels. But especially with this year, with everything being done for the first time, the production experience has been an all hands on deck.
Right, right. Well, no, you sound like you've been doing it forever. When you told me 2019, I'm like, oh my God, and then you got thrust into this.
Well, thank you.
You know, it's like, oh, here's flying smoothly. Here we go. Yep, just another day. Let's put it together. And now you get hit with, oh my God, we got to do this on computers, you know. Oh my God, amazing how they pulled it all together. It really is. Because I remember when we had Adam on, and I was just in awe then how they were going to do it. And then when they did do it and put it all together, and it happened and it came out great. And now, I mean, I hope they take some pointers from you guys for the Oscars and whatnot, because I mean, you've done it. It works. You can do it. And, you know, it was done.
Well, thank you. We hope so. And we're really proud that we really were the first team to kind of take this on head on. And
yeah.
we have, as I mentioned, Steve Ulrich and Lisa Armstrong, our wonderful in-house production department. But we also had help from a directing team and playback team and the green room producers. So it was really just a great team that worked together well. And we had a common goal of trying to pull this off and making it feel like the award shows that we are used to, and giving every nominee that moment of getting to hear if their name is announced as the winner.
Right, right. Did you notice that this year, since there was no time limit or anything, that people went on a little longer with their acceptance speeches than normal?
So for the show on CBS and for our virtual shows, we did try to let them know 30 to 45 seconds for their speeches. That doesn't mean that everyone adhered to it.
No,
but
they never do.
sometimes we got the best moments from people who went a little longer. For
right,
instance,
right.
At the Sports Emmys, Kirk Herbstreit broke down into tears just talking about the gravity of this moment. And
yeah.
I think that would have been lost if we had really been strictly watching the time.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, our shows really ran on time.
Right.
Even if some speeches went a little bit over, we didn't obviously have performances, which tend to take up time in award shows. So we found that, honestly, all things considered, we were really, really, really happy with the length of all the shows, especially considering how many categories we decided to present on air.
Why didn't you do any performers?
We did an in memoriam segment for the pre-taped daytime Emmys, which obviously was voiceover or a song performance over the montage of those individuals who we lost in the previous year. But it is a whole other skill set to also incorporate live performances, considering everything else that we were trying to do.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that if this were to continue onward into next year and beyond, hopefully not, vaccine.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean it's not something that we wouldn't consider going forward. But
exactly.
There are other things that we were really focused on doing, and the daytime and the sports awards are not known for being very performance focused in terms of award shows.
That's
I think of, you know, the VMAs, which just happened, and the Tonys and the Oscars have more of a live performance component to them usually.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Are you still involved in Only Make Believe?
I am still involved in Only Make Believe. That's a great organization.
Now, how's that been going, or that has not been going with everything going on?
You know, Only Make Believe, for any listeners
who have not heard
of this organization, is a wonderful nonprofit based out of New York City that creates live theater and brings the magic of this interactive theater to kids who are in hospitals, long-term care facilities, and special education programs.
Beautiful.
And this is something that I hold very near and dear to my heart, as I have Crohn's disease and was very ill as a child and had many long-term hospitalizations. And also my original degree is in theater. So I have a background sort of in both branches of this organization. But like with everything, Only Make Believe has had to change the way that they're operating now, especially with the lockdown on who is being allowed into hospitals.
Right.
So they have transferred a lot of their interactive performances to YouTube so that people can try to enjoy them that way.
Right.
Just because visitors have not been allowed into hospitals in this capacity.
Right. Yeah. It's a shame. It is. Yeah. The poor kids, they probably miss you, you know, and I'm sure you miss them.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's one of those things where you don't even think about, well, I'm a healthy, able-bodied person who's walking into a hospital every week for 6 weeks to perform theater for these kids.
Right.
And you don't think about the privilege that entails, that, you know, your immune system can handle that.
Right. It's true.
But yeah, I'm on the junior board of that organization, and they have a fantastic, obviously a fantastic junior board and senior board staff, and then a troop of actors who traditionally travel to all of these different facilities and really bring kids out of their shell and give them an hour a week to just focus on being kids and not focus on being sick or different.
Right. Focus on nothing. Just have a good time.
Yeah.
What were you doing before you joined the Emmys?
I worked for the American Theater Wing for 8 years in Rising Roles. That is the organization that, of course, famously founded the Tonys and also is now the home of the Obies, which are the Off-Broadway Awards. So I my joke is that I'm halfway to an administrative EGOT because I did work on the Tonys, and now I'm doing work on the daytime Emmys. But
yeah,
definitely a nonprofit and arts administration background with a focus specifically on awards, which I feel like is very niche, but it's perfect for me.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely needed, and thank God you came up with a way to do it, because everybody needs entertainment right now, no matter what kind it is, and we just need an outlet, and the fact that you guys pulled it off, and hopefully they're going to continue to pull it off in even a grander scale now that you guys broke the seal, you know, the Oscars and everything. But it's just great that you guys were the first to do it, and you did an amazing job at it.
Well, thank you so much for the support and for all of the great questions. I can say that we're really proud of the work that we did on these virtual telecasts, and if any of the other shows watched and want to take any of our ideas, we would be more than happy to give them to them with our blessing. And we are so glad that you enjoyed it, and I hope that your listeners watch and enjoy it as well.
Oh, absolutely. And when is the News and Documentary Emmys on again, please, Rachel?
News Emmys and Documentary Emmys are September 21st and September 22nd, both nights at 8 p.m. Eastern, and you can check those out on our new free OTT app, which is just the Emmys app, and you can download that to your phone, iPad, Roku, Fire Stick, et cetera, or you can go on the website and watch it at watch.theemmys.tv.
Right, or just the Emmys.tv too, right? No.
The Emmys.tv is our regular website.
You can
go there and check out all the information about all the contests that we do, and it will also give you the link to figure out how to watch.
Okay, I'm nominated for something. Who's got all the envelopes? Give me the address. I'm going there now.
You want to know in advance?
I'm only kidding. I'm not nominated for anything. I'm nominated to stand in the line for the ladies' room or at the DMV. You're on the East Coast, right?
Yes. Yes, I'm in Queens, New York.
Oh, okay. We're in New Jersey over here. We're not too far, right across the river there.
Oh, very nice. Yes. Yeah. Our office is in Midtown Manhattan, but
right.
As I said, we have not been there since March.
Yeah, me too. I haven't been to work since March either, but
yeah.
I'm okay with it. But, you know, it's rather safe than sorry. So, and life is going on, so we're doing well. But everybody, thank you so much to Rachel Schwartz. Check out the News Emmys and Documentary Emmys on September 21st and 22nd, and you can catch it on watch.theemmys.tv. Or at theemmys.tv, and what's the app? I saw you. Oh,
the Emmys app.
App.
It's just called the Emmys. Yep, and you can search for it in, you know, in your phone, in the Apple Store, App Store, on your Roku, Fire Stick, etc.
Great. Well, Rachel, thank you so much. It really was a pleasure speaking with you. Stay safe. Good luck. I hope when it's all done, you can take a deep breath and stop stressing out over how it's going to go. And I'm sure it'll be great.
Well, thank you so much for having me on, and hope everybody is staying healthy and safe.
You got it. Thank you so much. Take care, Rachel. It was a pleasure. Have a good night. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. All right, everybody. Wow. I had fun. Johnny missed a good one tonight. Unfortunately, I don't want to hang up on the show. There we go.